Thank you for standing by. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome to the AGT Food and Ingredients Inc. third quarter 2015 financial results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, simply press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Al-Khatib.
Thank you for joining us on our third quarter 2015 conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of AGT Food and Ingredients, and Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer. Before we get started today, I'd like to remind everyone that this call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'd like to turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thank you, Omar. Welcome, everyone, to our call. AGT's performance in recent periods, particularly over the past year, has been consistent and positive with the exciting development, acquisitions, expansions, and significant opportunities I would like to share more about with our shareholders. We're delivering consistent results in our business with volumes and our sales programs continuing to report positive progress. We feel it's an important measure for a company like ours that is maturing in its business as we embark on the next phases of growth that is guided by the strategic plan that our management team has initiated and is currently executing. In our legacy segment, we have had a busy traditional shipping period ahead of us with a significant amount of pulses and durum wheat produced in Western Canada and the Northern Tier states in 2015, and we anticipate robust export levels for 2015 and early 2016 to key consumption markets like India, the Indian subcontinent, Turkey, and the Middle East, North Africa. AGT is one of the largest pulse and staple foods exporters in the world, with customers in virtually every major pulse and staple foods consumption and import market. And our facilities are benefiting from our position in the market and from ample supply and production origins. From all indications we have market intelligence reports from our own sales and merchandising teams, our agents, and our customers on the ground in these markets. Demand for pulses and staple foods continues to be strong, as it has been for some time, evidenced by the high volumes we've seen shipping over the most recent and our past quarters. We're investing in AGT with regards to transportation and logistics to create more opportunity in our business to supply our customers and our own operations and some of our recent acquisitions. Coupling this for opportunities that are developing in our food ingredient and packaged food segment, where food companies, pet food companies, and feed customers are viewing pulse ingredients that provide advantages for them in their own applications and products in a positive manner, we feel we have the right foundation to develop new areas of opportunity. And we're investing in this area as well. Market conditions and competitive advantages are feeding the growth story that we feel will benefit AGT in the coming years to grow both our major segments and our company overall. We're certainly excited about the developments, and I want to share with you a little more. But first, I'm going to ask our CFO, Lori Ireland, to share with you the highlights from this quarter. Lori?
Thanks, Matt. Hi. AGT reported adjusted EBITDA of $23.2 million for the quarter ended September 30th, 2015. Trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA was $92.4 million, an increase of 14% when comparing to $80.8 million for the trailing 12 months ended September 30th, 2014. Sales volumes increased over the prior quarter in the pulses and grain processing segment, however decreased a bit in the food ingredients and packaged food segment. The decrease was largely due to two reasons. First of all, it was the end of the Ramadan period, marking a religious holiday in Turkey, so in conjunction with the holiday, the pasta lines were shut down for maintenance. In addition, many of AGT's food customers perform their annual maintenance during this period, so demand dropped off slightly due to this. We did see improvements in adjusted gross profit and adjusted EBITDA per ton, though, at $214.92 and $141.11 compared to $188.54 and $121.77 in the prior quarter for the food ingredients segment. Inventory increased in the quarter from $334 million at June 30, 2015, to $411.5 million at September 30, 2015. This is typical for the North American harvest period and also reflects longer in-transit inventory times associated with strategic transfers to AGT subsidiaries. The AGT global footprint has grown and the business is working capital intensive. Managing assets remains a focus for management. Working capital as a percentage of trailing 12-month revenue has declined from 20.71% at December 2014 to 17.81% at September 30, 2015. The ratio of working capital to trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA has also declined from 3.23 at December 31, 2014 to 2.94 at September 30, 2015. Management views this as a positive trend, and we will continue to analyze relevant ratios to ensure that working capital is deployed effectively. Many global currencies devalued significantly against both the Canadian and the U.S. dollar during the quarter ended September 30, 2015. This resulted in an $18.6 million foreign exchange adjustment recorded in the quarter. This adjustment includes a snapshot of outstanding foreign-denominated accounts receivable and accounts payable, as well as outstanding foreign exchange contracts, and includes the contract related to the high-yield bonds. Note that this is a non-cash item, and it will fluctuate depending on the strength or weakness of foreign currencies when compared to the Canadian dollar. The amount is excluded from adjusted EBITDA due to the non-cash nature. AGT has a treasury process in place to ensure that when we need to purchase foreign exchange currencies to settle debt, it would be minimized if it results in a cash loss on foreign exchange. The decrease in general and administrative and marketing, sales and distribution expenses for the 3 months ended September 30, 2015 compared to the prior quarter is due to decreased average share prices, which impacted the share-based compensation accrual, as well as a reduction in legal expenses this quarter. This is partially offset by costs related to recent acquisitions. Finance expense includes costs associated with the cross-currency swap on the high-yield bond, and it's recorded in both unrealized foreign exchange and in finance expense throughout the life of the contract. Though these costs affect unrealized foreign exchange and finance, these are non-cash adjustments and both have no impact on adjusted EBITDA. The expense also includes a fair value adjustment on this instrument. AGT also utilizes various trade finance instruments, and the costs associated with these instruments are also recorded in finance expense. On a normalized basis, finance expense is in the range of $6.5 to $7.5 million per quarter when considering interest on bank indebtedness, long-term debt, bond interest, and various trade finance instruments. AGT tracks adjusted earnings per share as it is reported exclusive of the non-cash foreign exchange effects of our global business, whether that means a gain or a loss, because management feels that inclusion of both gains and losses that result from snapshot non-cash IFRS effects do not accurately reflect the cash flow generating ability of our business. Adjusted earnings per share improved to 51 cents, basic and fully diluted, for the 3 months ended September 30, 2015. Compared to 46 cents and 45 cents fully diluted for the same period last year, and compared to 45 cents and 44 cents for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2015. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Lori. AGT's food and ingredient and packaged food segment continues to be very consistent in its performance. During the quarter, margins improved, though metric tons decreased in this period. When we look at the reasons for the decrease in this period, as Lori had mentioned, it is quite a normal occurrence that volumes are actually a little bit more variable during the summer periods, as our customers are also scheduling maintenance and holiday periods. When I look at the packaged food and food ingredient segment, it's continued to perform consistently with regards to margin and metric tons, and we did demonstrate a continued acceleration of both the adjusted gross profit and the EBITDA per tons. Additionally, the segment, certainly is a segment that benefits from our other main segment, the legacy business, with regards to origination strength, buying products from producers directly, and supplying the raw materials required for the food ingredient production. When I look at the facility picture overall, the Minot facility utilization was around 69% in quarter three, up from about 65% at the end of the second quarter. So even with the summer slowdown periods, utilization did inch up, and we are seeing robust sales in the fourth quarter and good visibility into the commissioning of the deflavoring line in 2016. As an update on the facility construction, we are going to be completing building construction before the end of quarter four, and the installation and commissioning of the deflavoring line, which is the first new addition of a line in the new constructed facility, will begin in January, with commissioning activities set for February and March. So by the end of the first quarter, we should be producing deflavored products for the food industry. In the food ingredient business unit, you know, overall demand from food companies appear to be less susceptible to volatility in commodity and currencies. So we're excited to be able to capitalize on that high-protein, high-fiber, GMO-free, gluten-free, micronutrient-rich demand with a strong environmentally sustainable profile. We're excited about the launch of the International Year of Pulse activities for 2016. We are seeing food companies' awareness of that International Year of Pulses as declared by the United Nations to be strong, and we are seeing product development and application development activities being stepped up by some major global food companies to react to what they anticipate could be heightened awareness and increased demand for pulse-based food products in 2016-17 and beyond. Growth in our packaged food business does continue. We did have a slight decrease in invoice tons over the quarter in our pasta business, but I can tell you that the demand and the inventory produced over the course of the quarter has moved in the fourth quarter, and that business line continues to operate at a very high utilization rate. When I look at the overall pulse and grains processing segment, the harvest is complete. The harvest did come out as management expected, with a slightly above average yield and above average quality. So from the perspective of the news reports on significant droughts and crop failures, management maintained their view that we would end up with an average crop in Canada. And as a result of increased acreage, in particular in the lentil sector, supplies available for 2015 and 16 will actually be increased over last year. Quite robust prices and strong demand from all regions of the world. We're anticipating an opportunity to move the entire crop this year, and we are expecting that that strong price performance at the farmer level in North America will lead to another increase in acreage looking at 2016 into 2017. Demand visibility is starting to show its consistency as well, you know, with order books for the first quarter and even the third quarter of 2016, you know, where we have material sales that are being made for the new crop of 2016, in particular into India and into the Middle East region, in particular with Turkey and a few markets in that area. This demand is actually not a usual occurrence where we have such a forward-looking order book where we have 3, 4, 5 months of visibility in terms of demand. And I think it's just reflecting the overall shortage and the perception of a less than average harvest coming in India in March. So this should bode well for our results going forward. When I look at what we're going to continue to focus on, we're going to continue to focus on the integration of our acquisition of West Central Road and Rail and the recently completed mobile grain and mobile capital acquisitions, which include the Last Mountain Railway and the Big Sky Railway. We're excited about putting this platform to work in quarter four and beyond, augmenting our bulk capacity to be able to feed not only our customers, but our growing requirement for durum wheat and lentils within our Turkish processing platform. And I think this is going to be an area of certain contribution for 2016. I think I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to open it up for some questions.
Thanks a lot, Murat. Operator, we'll take the first question, please.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. The first question comes from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Hoping to get a bit more granularity on the food ingredients. So maybe just starting off with the sales volumes for the Minot facility and what the split there was between what was for animal markets and human. And then maybe talk a little bit about the margin, both on the animal side and the human side. And that deflavoring line, what has been spent on that to date, and how much volume are you moving through that deflavoring line right now?
Okay, so let me just start with the last part of your question, Jacob. Just to be very clear, the deflavoring line is still under construction right now, so there is no volume that has run through. That line will start to commission and produce in February, March of 2016. So right now, you know, the entire marketing of line 1, 2, and 3 is entirely the traditional, you know, pulse ingredients, the flours, the protein starches, and the fibers. And so when I look at, you know, the deflavored line, of course, the main target for that will be to dramatically increase the split between the human food market, and really, you use the word animal, but I would divide that into two segments, pet food and then animal feed. Animal feed is the segment that we don't want to participate in long term. We're using that segment to ensure that we have outlets to move our starch byproduct from the processing. Now, as we get into the food applications, a deflavored pulse flour, which we call our V6000, which is our starch fraction, that is a very suitable product for wheat flour replacement in gluten-free applications. And so, Jacob, it is 12% protein, it is high in starch, it is natural, it's non-GMO, and it still has a very strong micronutrient profile. So the deflavoring line, you know, bottom line is it's a game changer for us. It will allow us to take the food, you know, side of our business from around, let's say, 20% today, maybe 20-25% today. We have a target in, you know, to get by 2017 to be at a, you know, a minimum of a 50-50 split between human food and pet food. We do expect the margin lift to be material when we do continue down the path of implementing the transition or the growth profile in the food sector. The deflavoring line will actually take the remaining you know, production from the third processing line, and it will then run it through that modification or that deflavoring process. Now, as we get you know, more robust demand overall, then you know we will continue to give more guidance on the addition of line 4 and line 5, but we're looking to see how, you know, the demand goes. I mean, if the food demand ramps up very quickly, we may have to add another production line and another deflavoring line instead of two more production lines. Each one of these combinations has a margin impact, whereas we further process, we add additional margin. The deflavoring line project I would split into two, you know, activities. One is the construction of the building and the physical infrastructure, which can house six processing lines, one of which is the deflavoring line. So the deflavoring plus five additional spots for processing. That project is around $12.5 million. And that project, I would say, is probably 75% spent and funded already. So around $10 million of that is funded. And then the deflavoring line itself is around $6 to $7 million, of which, again, I would say 80% of that is funded. So we've funded roughly about 15 of the 19 or 20 million already. What's left is really just some electrical and installation work, and we're on time and on budget to get that completed. Pretty excited about getting that implemented and in line.
The next question comes from Peter Prattis of Alta Corp Capital. Please go ahead, Peter.
Good morning, guys. The first question is on the legacy business. Obviously, had a nice uptick here in volume. And I'm just wondering, you know, does that momentum carry into, I guess, this quarter next, especially given your read maybe of some of the pending crops in other parts of the world?
Yeah, Peter, you know, definitely, you know, an uptick on volume wasn't just the Canadian business. If you do look at that uptick in volume quarter over quarter, of course, the new crop harvest that came in August, you know, did have an effect on that. We do have a very large capacity now with both the, you know, legacy business as it traditionally stood and with the addition of West Central Road and Rail with the bulk capacity augmentation. You know, you saw a little bit of that in quarter three. We are expecting very strong utilization, you know, coming up over the fourth quarter and into quarter one. And as I said, even the order book into quarter two has some, you know, visibility where we usually don't get more than 3 months ahead. I mean, 3 months ahead is usually a very strong, you know, demand profile. We're now into a position where 3 months is pretty clear. 4, 5, and 6 months has sales, and even into the new crop, you know, India came into the market a full year in advance to ensure that they had slots booked for new crop Canada in September, October of 2016. So, you know, I think that we're certainly going to see the benefit of the demand, you know, consistency. Now, prices have been accelerating in terms of both the grower levels and the destination levels. So I think that, you know, that is one factor that, you know, will be a balance to a bit of the robustness is, you know, farmers in general, as prices are increasing, sometimes they're actually less of a seller than they are when prices are declining. And so from the perspective of that, I think there's going to be good, strong, robust demand. I think there'll be farmers selling into the window, which should give us an opportunity to continue 6 consecutive quarters of very consistent performance. And so what people have been, you know, asking us to do is deliver some predictability. And I think that what we're showing in our legacy segment is that actually, the legacy business, a pretty good business, and the food ingredients business, pretty excellent business. I think that's what the profile is going forward.
That's great. And just one then on the ingredients segment. You continue to shoot higher with the margin per ton metrics despite the downtick in volume. So I'm just wondering, what was the key driver of that? Was it more a mix towards higher value food ingredients at Minot, or are you getting some pricing power? Are you gaining efficiencies, or is there something else notable there?
I think it's a combination, Peter, of things that, you know, would contribute in multiple effects. And one is that, you know, by the way, utilization was up by about 3 points on the quarter. So, you know, the overall decline in the volume was really related to our pasta and our South Africa business. And, you know, when we're invoicing tons, it's a snapshot. You're taking one day in time as the cutoff. So if product is sitting at the port and it's not invoiced and it's not riding a vessel, it goes into the next quarter. So in general, volumes were up slightly in the food ingredient. Really, the big contributor to the uptick would be a bit more food, a bit more diversity in the book, and an uptick in the price of our starch fraction. So as we take it out of the true feed sector and put it into both pet food and human food uses, we're going to see a margin improvement. So a $20 gain here was certainly you know, very positive trend.
The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Murad, you've made some big strategic moves here over the last 8 to 12 months on the origination side. Just trying to get a sense for where you're at in sort of that playbook, whether you're done or there's more to do. And then maybe as just a derivative of that, you know, how does this, you know, bolstered origination profile affect your utilization goals or targets that you've set in the past?
Okay, yeah, good question. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's fair to say that we've taken a, you know, pretty material bite. Because, you know, this model of the West Central Road and Rail combined with ownership of the locomotives, leased grain cars, and the trackage in a major, major production region of this country gives us a scalable platform. I mean, Steve, it's all actually, you know, hinging on our ability to utilize our grain cars and the grain cars allowed to us, you know, under a normal service granted by CN Railways. And so, you know, what I mean by that is you can do a unit train a week. If you can get the service, you could do two unit trains a week. We can start to scale that platform anywhere between 400,000 up to 800,000 up to 1.2 million tons. So with that, I'm giving you the clarity. You know, we've got a very strong origination footprint bump and augmentation. We're going to focus on integrating that. We're going to focus on developing profitable business on differentiated, you know, even the bulk business. You know, we think that Durham wheat for our own pasta and marketed to other millers can be marketed according to characteristics. We think that Durham wheat can be another lentils for an AGT where we can establish a globally dominant origination and supply position. So we're going to focus on that. You know, we're done for now to continue to integrate those acquisitions. I think it's certainly going to be a positive impact for us in 2016 and 17.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, simply press star and one to join the question queue. The next question comes from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Two quick questions. First, how much was the pause in sequential volume growth in Minot a function of Ingredion and their customers awaiting product from the deflavoring line?
Okay, well, you know, certainly I can tell you that we feel that we will have, you know, strong demand for the deflavored product. So, you know, the fact that, you know, if you have an application, Mark, that has decided that they want to continue to go down the path of the deflavored, they cannot necessarily go down the path of the traditional ingredient. So, you know, I think that I wouldn't characterize the pause as something that I think is structural. It's certainly just seasonal and a normal, you know, trend in terms of the development of a business unit that went from scratch to, you know, tens of thousands of tons in a very short period of time. We expect the demand in quarter four and quarter one to continue to boost that utilization going into that Q1 period where the deflavoring line is up and commissioned. You know, I can tell you unequivocally we're pleased with the, you know, ingredient partnership. The progress to date has been as per my expectations. You know, we are in, you know, material discussions with a number of large global majors, not only at the R&D level, the product development level, but even engagement at the top-to-top executive management levels. And that's where we wanted to be at this point, is in a position where we can affect the order book when the deflavoring line, which I think is, as I said earlier, it's a game changer. We believe that our deflavored product has significant improvements over the initial product that we were producing because of that neutralization of the flavor profile and the maintenance of the protein quality, the protein functionality, and the overall functionality of the ingredients. So from that perspective, Mark, we're quite pleased, and I think it's going to continue to go.
Okay, that's fair enough. And then just turning to the working capital, you know, the number, the working capital grew in the quarter. I'm just curious, what impact does the WCRR deal and mobile deal, what was the impact of that on working capital? What is the impact of these higher lentil prices on working capital, and what are you doing to manage that?
Listen, certainly, you know, higher commodity prices are going to be, you know, an effect over the, you know, coming, you know, quarter four, quarter one. You know, what we do to manage it is we attempt always to, you know, attempt to manage our payment terms, you know, to manage the available working capital that we have. And, you know, what I can tell you is that we're turning our working capital frequently. As Lori mentioned, you know, while absolute dollar may have risen slightly, I want to also say, Mark, don't forget, we're taking a snapshot on the 30th of September and we're reporting it to you. Mm-hmm. This was the height of the harvest and shipping period in a New Crop Canada where we had no product available prior. So, you know, I can tell you that inventory that was in the system has moved out in October and in November. It continues to turn along. But when we report to you, we're going to start to report things like, you know, dollar of working capital per dollar of revenue, dollar of working capital per dollar of EBITDA. We're showing a decline in those metrics, meaning that the dollar value of our working capital is being deployed to generate both sales and earnings. So from an efficient, you know, working capital utilization and use perspective, I think we're actually getting better over the course of the period. So we're going to focus on consistency to have our working capital so that we're not increasing dramatically. We're going to keep trying to turn it.
The next question is from Greg Coleman of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murad. I don't want to get into too much granularity here on the ingredients, but I do want to come back to the margins a little bit there. I appreciate the color you gave us on you know, sequentially better margins, even though we had volumes come down a little bit. But looking forward, is this the kind of thing where we can expect it to continue to creep up as we see the volumes come back, as we see the utilization continue to tick higher? Or was the quarter a little bit of I guess, diversity mix and product mix perfection? Just don't want to get too excited about continuing to march those things higher, even before the deflavoring comes online.
Well, two things, Greg. I do want to reiterate that the food ingredient itself did not sequentially go down in tonnage. The segment overall did. So I just want to repeat the fact that the decline in tonnage was attributed to our packaged foods business, not to our food ingredient business. It is one segment, but I want to give you that that certain clarity that utilization went up about 3 points in the year on that third in the quarter on that third line. But you know, to get back to your question, there is no doubt that additional capacity utilization of line 3 and the contributions to margin of line, you know, 4, which is really the deflavoring lines, the deflavoring won't add more capacity, but that product that goes through the fractionation process, the milling process, and then the deflavoring process will have a higher value. It will be sold at a higher value, and it will generate an additional margin on the processing of those particular products that are going out. So, you know, I do consider that the operating leverage of this segment will continue to show improvements going forward in 2016 into 2017. Now, whether we'll be able to maintain the pace of, you know, going from 90, I think it was around $96 was the first time we reported in this segment to $141 EBITDA per ton this quarter, that's a pretty material improvement. Whether we'll keep that pace in a 1 or 2 year period, I can't tell you yes or no. What I can tell you is we continue to look at the fact that this is a very high fixed cost business, the food ingredient business, and increased utilization, increased value add will improve margins going forward.
The next question comes from Paul Tepsich of High Rock Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, Murad, congratulations, good quarter. Just on your, a lot of discussion on working capital, I caught some of it, missed some, but your current ratio, your credit facility has a covenant of greater than 1.25 times.
Yeah.
And you seem like you've dropped down a little bit here, and perhaps even over time.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the only thing that that would have caused the drop down, I mean, some of that is currency related, right? When you're translating back, you know, say, you know, Turkish lira, you know, denominated, you know, working capital that gets translated back to a dollar basis, you know, you're in a position where you do have that overall reduction. But Paul, just to be very clear on one thing though, the current ratio in our credit facility is at the subsidiary level, not at the AGT level. So it is actually at the Alliance Pulse Processors level, which is the syndicated credit borrower.
Yeah, right, right.
And what I can tell you is from Q2 to Q3, the ratio was actually maintained at the consistent level, tested at about 2.02.
Okay, great. That's good.
So we're head and shoulders above, you know, covenants. And, you know, Paul, as you and I have talked about in the past, there's two ways to manage your leverage: decrease debt or increase earnings. We chose to increase earnings and try and maintain the debt. And as you know, our leverage profile is down to around probably 3.5 or 3.6 times total debt to EBITDA. When we take out that working capital piece, we'd be in the single one digit somewhere. So I'm pretty happy with the progress on the working capital debt side.
Well done, and thanks for the clarification.
No problem, Paul. Thanks.
The next question is from Anup Prihar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just two quick questions. First of all, what was the capacity utilization on the processing segment during Q3?
Anup, when we look at the pulses and grains processing utilization, we were sitting actually, we were running, I think, around 88% in quarter, I guess in quarter one or quarter, yeah, in the periods where we had crop available. So last year and into quarter one, whereas when we look at this quarter, because the July and August period were still not the new crop, we came in at around 70% utilization in our traditional legacy business asset base. So the utilization was down in the quarter, but if I look at the utilization in the month of September, Anup, we would have been back up around that 87 to 88% range, which was running at quite high utilization. Now that would exclude the tons that were shipped on a bulk basis through the West Central Road and Rail. So if I added those tons in, you know, the utilization would go up, but it's hard to pin the number of what the capacity is on those. So when I report to you capacity utilization from now on, we're going to try and give a bit more clarity in our disclosures, excluding the tons handled in the bulk system, so that you can start to track, you know, a bit more on the utilization. What I can tell you, though, is I think that visibility-wise, Anup, going forward, we're going to continue to run in our pulse value-added processing assets at very high utilization in quarter four, quarter one. And the pasta processing side continued to run at full utilization, although invoice tons were down. And I can tell you that that inventory that was built up after the maintenance period was shipped out and will continue to ship out in October, November, December. The food ingredient side, as I said, ran at around 69%, up from 65 or 66. So we're up, you know, 3 or 4 points on the utilization there. Visibility-wise, though, the fourth quarter has been a good, strong shipping period there as well.
Okay. And then just one last question on the ingredient side. I mean, you made it pretty clear that although those segmented volumes are showing as being down, actual ingredient volumes per se were up in the quarter. I noticed in the MD&A you talk about Ingredion rolling out into new markets, particularly China and Southeast Asia. So what I'm wondering is how much of the food ingredients volume, the true food ingredients volume, is being used to stock those channels as opposed to what would otherwise just be contracted sales?
Anup, I can tell you that the system with Ingredion does not have a material stocking component. So, you know, the inventory levels that are stocked into warehouses and distribution are literally, you know, negligible volumes. They have a very sophisticated, you know, ability to project volumes on a contractual basis. So I can tell you there is, you know, zero material inventory that would have been shipped to stock that hasn't been sold. So I think that the, you know, the total value of inventory that we'd have, you know, into Ingredion at any one time would be, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars maximum globally. So they're running a just-in-time system. They are very cognizant of their working capital. There's no effect like that where it's stocked and it's not sold. And yeah, I don't have any effects like that. Now the rollout of China and Asia, I think, is an exciting side because we've made significant progress in North America. Our European progress started a few months later. We're making good progress there, but China needed to start because we think that the snack food market there is going to be a snack food, and the noodle markets are going to be material markets for us, you know, in the go forward period. And as you know, Anup, we have the Tianjin China processing plant that we built 2 years ago. It's a very material sized asset. It's 168,000 square feet, located 34 kilometers from the port of Tianjin. It's very well suited to be integrated into our ingredient platform in the future. So I want China to go, and I want it to, you know, it's going to take some time, but I want it to start.
We have a follow-up question from Greg Coleman of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Murad, I just want to touch on your 2016 capital program here. You had some good commentary talking about integrating your recent purchases, so I just want to talk about kind of the organic build with the deflavoring line coming on and, you know, potential for something else after that. What are you thinking the total organic spend is going to look like for 2016?
Like I said earlier on the deflavoring line of the building, I would say 15 out of the 20 million has already been funded, so very minimal 2016 impact on that, probably about 5 million. Now, we have budgeted globally about 20 to 25 million globally, and that would be split up between food ingredients would be around 15 million of that. There's around, say, 5 to 10 million for what I would consider to be either growth or really more efficiency-based CapEx programs in our legacy business. You know, so an example is, you know, we're doing an automation project on our packaging systems in one of our factories in Canada that will allow us to go down to 5 kg and 10 kg packing. So these are the type of projects that save labor, increase our ability to penetrate new wholesale and retail markets in emerging markets. That would be a kind of a efficiency CapEx program. Our maintenance CapEx, Greg, runs around 10 to 12 million a year, and that's expensed, which would be pretty close to matching our depreciation amortization. So, you know, it's going to be a very managed CapEx program that we can fund through our free cash flow.
Sure. You said your maintenance is expensed?
Yeah, absolutely. The big bulk of our maintenance CapEx would be expensed.
Great. Thanks. That's it for me.
Thank you.
This concludes time allocated for questions on today's call. I'll now hand the presentation over back to Omar Al-Khatib for closing remarks.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of the questions in the session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on the call today, and I'd like to remind anyone still on the call that if you do have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. So, again, thanks for attending our call today, and we wish you all a very good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.